Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to episode 3 of Movie Boobs, a new podcast dedicated to speculation of both the Academy Awards and of box office futures. Again, the BOOB in our title stands for Box Office and Oscar Buzz, as that is exclusively what our show will discuss. It can also represent its two hosts, the boobs being myself, Rob Laird, and Paul Schmidt. So I once more will apologize to any listeners who may have seen the name and thought they'd be getting something more titillating. The good news is that Paul and I are real and we are spectacular. Today we are joined, or we will be joined once again by our third boob and resident movie expert, slash snob, Steve Soucy. I believe he's calling in right now. I just got to get him queued up. In the meantime, today's episode is going to focus mainly on Oscar predictions, as nominations will be released in less than 1 week. We will go down category by category discussing the betting expert slash favorites to receive the nominations, and then we'll go ahead and make our own predictions. And then next week, we'll just discuss how exactly wrong we were. Gentlemen, I believe you can both hear me. Are you guys good to go?
I think I'm good to go. Can you hear me?
All right, good. Yeah, I can hear you guys both. I just got to turn up my volume. I can barely hear you guys. I just got to turn up the volume here on this. But, so Oscar nominations come out on Thursday of this coming week. And we will, like I said, we'll kind of go over category by category, the six main categories, the acting ones, supporting ones, director and picture. And then we'll sort of look at the betting favorites and figure out if there is something unique. We'll go ahead and start right off with Best Picture. I'll give my, I believe I have 8 nominations here, or maybe 9. I think I have 9 that are going to get nominated. And then we'll kind of discuss if there's anything that might strange might happen. I have Spotlight as my favorite. And these are kind of in order of likelihood of they'll get nominations. I have Spotlight number 1. Then Revenant, then I have The Big Short. Up at number 4, I have Mad Max Fury Road, then The Martian, Room, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, and Carol. And something interesting that I saw at awardscircuit.com, which is the place that I go to now for my Oscar buzz. I go to it now that Rope of Silicon, God rest its soul, that website has shut down. There, they've jumped straight out of Compton all the way up to number 9, and they think it's going to get a nomination. They think it's going to get a nomination in place of Carol. That movie's gotten some late traction. I think that's interesting. I don't know where that's coming from. Straight out of Compton is kind of getting shut out of the nominations and other ceremonies, so I don't know why awardscircuit.com is doing that. But I do know there was a backslash last year for the Oscars being extremely white, so to say. There was a whiteout, and so I'm thinking maybe they have some information that they think is this might be a token nomination for an African American heavy themed movie. But anyway, nine nominations, you guys notice anything or have anything interesting to add to what I think is gonna happen here with these Best Picture nominations?
I actually want to jump in on that because you kind of stole my thunder just a little bit. I've been doing some reading this last week. I know a couple people that are actually in the Academy and that are voters, and just from people that I actually did some theater with in college that went out and became actors, and they have votes. And people that they've talked to a man, they're all putting Straight Outta Compton on their ballot, which I thought was really interesting. And I think it comes from more than just being last year's Oscars whiteout. There's been, over the last couple of years, a really large generational shift in the Academy. We've gone from the older generation to a younger one. And the bigger part about that is this is a lot of people that grew up with NWA, and that was something that, you know, I don't know how, you know, the movie touched on it a little bit. NWA crossed racial boundaries in the 80s. White people, black people, everybody listened to NWA, and everybody knows about them now. And the thing about that movie was it was actually really good. It was one of my favorite releases of 2015. It would have been on my list had I heard anything about it really getting that nomination in the last week. There was a lot of buzz about it when it first came out, and then that sort of quieted down. But over the last week or so, it's really picked up again. And I actually think it's going to steal a nomination. I think it's going to solidly be nominated as opposed to even just like sneaking in on the ballot.
Seuss, what do you think about this?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm sort of processing this information as I get it because I really haven't picked up on the same things that you've picked up on recently. I mean, I'm always fairly astonished in this process of how this all works because a lot of people, I think, are under the misconception that how these films are getting nominated. You are listing, say, 8 or 9 movies that you think should be nominated, and that's not the way this works. And my issue with Straight Outta Compton being nominated is in order for it to be, you know, placed on the actual ballot, it's got to be highly regarded on a lot of ballots to make it in.
20%, I believe, right?
Yeah, and while I love the movie, and if I were to simply sit down and rank the best 10 movies that I've seen this year in consideration for that, it's absolutely on that list. There's no doubt in my mind about it, and I've seen just about everything. So for me, I'd be like, yeah, okay, good. I still have a little bit, and I know this is probably an unfair characterization because I know it's changed, but I still see the Academy as skewing old. And I think in order for that movie to make the list, pretty much everybody who would come from the younger demographic has got to have that on there, and I just don't know that that happens. That's
well,
my skepticism.
Here'd be a good, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Paul, and we'll get back to you in a second, but you mentioned the process, and I want to explain this to our listeners who may not know. There are over 6,000 voters that, you know, that are available to vote for Oscar nominations. They all get sent out ballots, and this is according to mentalfloss.com, and I still don't fully understand it, but I'll read it just so it's out there. But voters are asked to list up to 5 names, ranked in order of preference. The Academy instructs voters to follow their hearts because the voting process doesn't penalize for picking up eccentric choices. Also, listing the same person or film twice doesn't help their cause. In fact, it actually diminishes the chance that the voters' ballot will be counted at all. Once members send back their ballots, PricewaterhouseCoopers begins the process of crunching the numbers. Specifically, they're looking for a magic number, the amount of votes that each category in each category that automatically turns a potential nominee into an official nominee. To determine that number, PwC takes PricewaterhouseCoopers takes the total number of ballots received in a particular category and divides it by the total possible nominees plus 1. An example is to take 600 potential ballots for the Best Actor category, divide that by 6, 5 possible nominees plus 1, thus making the magic number for the category 100 ballots to become an official nominee. The counting, which is done by hand, starts on a voter's first choice selection until someone reaches the magic number. So you've got your number 1, and when you get to 101, then let's say Leonardo DiCaprio for his performance in The Revenant reaches the magic number first. The ballots that named him as a first choice are then all set aside, and now there are 4 spots left for the Best Actor category. The actor with the fewest first place votes is automatically knocked out, and those ballots are redistributed based on voters' second place choices, though the actors are still in the running, retaining their calculated votes for the first round. The counting continues, and the actors are different categories rack up redistributed votes until all five spots are filled. And in Best Picture, I guess, until as many as 10 are filled, and maybe you won't get 10 that get that magic number. Now, just reading that again, I'm still confused. But there's your process for how you determine Best Picture. And so you would think then, I think at least an easy thing to assume, is that, yes, Straight Outta Compton has to be ranked very high. But I would also think that the voters would understand this, correct? And maybe rank something that maybe they think is an eccentric vote.
I think they do, but I mean, regardless of that situation, I think in order – the whole process seems much more complicated than I think it needs to be completely honest. I really don't get why it has to be this weird. I mean, I think I do have a pretty good handle on how it all works, and that breeds my skepticism about it. Maybe there's a lot more, maybe I'm being naive, maybe there's a lot more people working in concert in these types of situations to get this stuff done. And if that's the case, I'm disappointed in the process, if that's actually what someone's gaming the system.
I want to react to what Seuss just said, because there's no reason why they can't set a vote threshold and basically run it like a Hall of Fame ballot, where you can vote for up to 10 nominees, hit a percentage, and then you get nominated. And the top 10 that hit that percentage are going to go in. There's no reason why you can't do that. To the point about Straight Outta Compton, what I'm hearing, the movies that are actually getting squeezed, I heard about Carol. I still think gut feeling Carol does get nominated. I just think the subject matter is too timely, and the one thing that the Academy loves more than movies about movies is they love timely source material, and that's why Carol's going to get nominated. The movies that I'm hearing are getting squeezed are movies like Bridge of Spies, The Martian, and shockingly to me anyway, The Revenant, which I know sounds absolutely patently ridiculous, but the movie's a little bit of a mess. Leonardo DiCaprio steals that movie, but the movie's all over the place, and it is all Leonardo DiCaprio. It reminds me a little bit of Robert Duvall in The Apostle, which the movie was a complete mess, but Robert Duvall was a goddamn masterpiece in that. So I don't know.
Well,
maybe
I think
to The Revenant, but
I think that if you look at in general, I think that would help. That actually helps the case of Straight Outta Compton, because I think the scattershot nature of this ballot, because I look at it and, like I said, I've seen damn near everything, and to me, there are only three movies that I would be downright irritated with if they were not on the Best Picture ballot, and that's it. I mean,
one of them is Spotlight. What are the other two?
The other two, and one of them is one that you already mentioned, and that's The Martian. I just think that checks a bunch of boxes as far as what I want Best Picture to be. It engaged me. I just found it that way. And then the other one is one that's not going to get nominated, but I'm going to be irritated when it does not. And it's not
Inside Out,
but I understand that it's probably not going to get nominated, but that doesn't change my feeling about it. So
am I crazy for thinking that was the Best Picture of 2015, by the way?
I don't disagree with you. I still lean slightly to Spotlight, but I would have no argument with that opinion.
Did you guys see this little thing that somebody did where they took out all of the inside portions of Inside Out and made it like a 20-minute clip where it was just the girl doing her thing? Did anybody see this?
Yeah.
It was really good. It was really good. I was like, wow. Yeah, it was really a unique movie. It was probably the best animated movie since WALL-E, at least in my opinion. And that's a movie that didn't get nominated either, I don't think.
No, it didn't, because that was the year of The Dark Knight, as I recall, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Both those got blocked out, and that's sort of what caused all the chaos. Yeah.
The thing about
Inside Out is,
go ahead. Sorry, go. Well, we can move on.
No, go ahead.
That's fine.
I was going to say
it's already being used to teach children about mental illness, the movie is. I mean, it's unreal the depth that this movie portrayed and how it's already being used in our society. I think we're going to look back on Inside Out in 20 years, and that's going to be the movie from 2015 that we look at and say, holy cow, this was really a masterpiece. And the fact that it's animated, you can throw that away. It doesn't even matter. It was such a well-done movie.
Okay, so and I left out Trumbo off my list too, which I didn't want to do, but I did leave it out because I just didn't see it. It was getting enough buzz other places, and I didn't want to just put a weird movie in there just to do it. But I do like that movie. I like its chances because it's a movie about movies. But my 9 are Spotlight, Revenant, Big Short, Mad Max, Martian, Room, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, and Carol. Paul, can I get your list? Do you have a list in front of you? You can give me for your predictions.
I do. Mine will be Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Carol, Inside Out, Mad Max, The Martian, Spotlight, Straight Outta Compton, Room, Sicario. I believe that is 10.
Okay, so you're going Sicario. All right. And that's a movie that's you see getting nominated for different things. That's not terrible.
It's called Seuss, what's Sicario.
Yeah. What's your list, Seuss? Do you have one?
Well, my list is basically this is a deviation from what I would usually do in this exercise, which is I enjoy being right. I know this list isn't going to be right, but I'm doing it anyway.
Okay.
Spotlight, The Big Short, The Martian, Room, Inside Out, Brooklyn, The Revenant, and Star Wars.
Ooh. Okay. All right. Star Wars getting the vote.
By the way, I just
we'll
want to
get
say this, point.
Yeah.
That was 7 movies, I believe, Seuss?
8.
8, okay.
Yeah, I have 8. I have 8 on his count.
Okay.
Yep. So,
I'm bad at the keys.
So, now, and I'm going to get one of these names wrong because I don't watch enough TV or listen to enough radio. I'm all internet, so I don't hear the name enough, but I'm going to get one of these names terribly wrong. But we're going to move on to Best Director. And typically, a good rule of thumb is if you win Best Picture, you've won. Or I should reverse it. If you win Best Director, you're going to win Best Picture. That hasn't been the case the last couple of years, but traditionally, it's the case. Again, though, I think we still deviate from the norm in this case. I think that the person getting the most buzz is George Miller for Mad Max. I have him as my winner. I have Templeton coming in really high. Thomas McCarthy for Spotlight. I have Todd Haynes getting nominated, and Alejandro Iñárritu. Did I get that right?
That was pretty good. I think so.
Okay. All right. And then Ridley Scott as my 5 nominations. And like I said, usually it's a case where, you know, Best Director is a good indicator for Best Picture, but it has been that way the last 2 years, and I think that tradition continues, although it wouldn't surprise me if McCarthy got Director. Paul, what do you think?
I think McCarthy is the front runner because I think Spotlight is as close to a masterpiece as Inside Out is. I think it's really good. George Miller, Iñárritu, Ridley Scott, and I'm going to throw J.J. Abrams out there for Star Wars because I think he's getting a lot of credit for that movie, and I think that's where Star Wars gets the credit in this award.
So you're leaving off. Did you leave off Miller then, or did you leave off Haynes?
I left George Miller off. Yes. No, I'm sorry. I left off Todd Haynes. I'm sorry.
You left off Haynes. Okay.
Todd Haynes and Adam McKay technically for The Big Short, if we're talking about Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, I'm not. I didn't include him in there.
Sure, okay. But yeah.
Okay, so we're pretty much in agreement on that, except you think that it's going to be McCarthy getting the win, and you have Abrams on and Haynes off. Seuss, anything you want to add to this one?
Well, I've had a problem with this category. I'm going to abstain from participating in it.
All right. All right.
Because the one thing that you did not mention from my Oscar picks is I have left out a movie from the picks that you both had ranked fairly highly in your list, and it's partial bias because I haven't seen it, and it's the only movie that I don't have a framework to go on at this point in time. But I left Mad Max off.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just have a hard time. Once again, I'm going back to the previous staple of the Academy. I just have a hard time putting them on.
I can actually almost put this in a framework for you based on one question, and that question is, how do you feel about Tom Hardy? See, and that's my...
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it really did, and that's sort of what I thought. I don't think you would like Mad Max, honestly.
Yeah.
It is very much how you feel about Tom Hardy is how you feel about that movie. I do happen to like him, and I think it's a really good movie.
And
right.
here's a question maybe for you, Paul, since you know a couple of the voters. I don't know anybody that has any affiliation with the Academy, but I know with baseball in the Hall of Fame, if you don't get along with the reporters, you're going to have a hard time getting into the Hall of Fame. And that voting process is not similar, but it's not dissimilar to the nomination process for Academy Awards. Tom Hardy's abrasive and nobody likes him.
Yep.
I mean, it's a general way of saying it, but it's, you know, is there a sort of personality, you know, corollary to getting nominated? Is that going to cause problems for Mad Max and for Tom Hardy?
So, at least from what I can tell from the people that I know, there is, but it extends more to social issues than it does just being a prick, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like,
right.
The two voters that I know, and I've actually asked them about this because I was curious, I can't remember, it wasn't for Tom Hardy, but it was for somebody else who was a noted asshole, and I can't remember who it was. But they both, to a man, said, hey, we don't like the guy, but that was a great performance. So they both ended up voting for him, and I can't remember who it was. Where they balk more, and this is how they both framed it, like independent of each other, was if somebody like Mel Gibson was there, they would have more of an issue, where it's somebody who's a noted anti-Semite or something like that. So the answer to that is yes, but there's qualifications to it. There's a lot of, we still respect the performance, but there's still hot button issues that make people react, if that makes sense.
Sure.
The only thing that I'll weigh in on in regards to the director race, if Inarritu wins, I'm cutting someone with a rusty blade.
Is that Birdman residue? I don't really know what's going on there.
I mean I think I expressed it to you, Rob. I may not have expressed it to Paul. Is that I really feel like The Revenant could have been a short.
Yeah.
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 I can see that.
I just.
So almost like a Tree of Life sort of connection there with just an hour and a half left.
let's not get crazy
all right.
here. All right.
Okay.
All right. That's a whole other different distinction.
All right. And speaking of Revenant, though, let's move on to Best Actor, where I think this is Leo's sort of Lifetime Achievement Award more than it is Best Performance of the Year Award. I have him pretty much handily as a favorite with Cranston, Redmayne, Fassbender, and Depp running out my nominations. I'm tempted to put Damon in as a sleeper because he's popping up on a lot of nominations for the various other award ceremonies around this time of year, and Depp has been somewhat ignored, but Depp's been so strong for so long in this race that I'm keeping him on reluctantly. So my five are Leo, Cranston, Redmayne, Fassbender, and Depp. Paul, what do you think?
Cranston, DiCaprio, Fassbender, Redmayne. There's always one nominee that you look at and you're like, what? And I'm going with Ian McKellen from Mr. Holmes.
Okay. I don't hate that because that's another Lifetime Achievement Award sort of thing.
Absolutely it is, yeah.
Okay, you have Cranston getting
yes.
in. Who did you leave off? Did you leave off Depp?
I left off Damon. Damon. Slash Depp if you want to, yeah. That.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And you have Cranston getting the win.
Yeah. No. I'm sorry for the win.
Okay.
DiCaprio. I think they give it to DiCaprio.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay. All right. I can see Mr. Holmes. I can see that. I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't hate the idea of that. Seuss, what do you think?
I do hate the idea of that, but
okay.
just a frame of reference, but only slightly different here. DiCaprio, Fassbender, Cranston, Damon, and Redmayne. And I don't really feel good.
Okay, so you have Damon instead of Depp. Okay.
I don't really feel good. I actually don't really feel good about the Redmayne selection. I thought that was just not really much of a movie. And I thought actually the more compelling performance was turned in by the female lead. So, I mean, I'm not saying that means that's going to be any sort of, I didn't put her on my list of nominees. I could have, but I didn't, but I felt like the stronger performance there was from her. I thought he was at best average, but to be honest with you, I couldn't find anyone else in the lead actor category that I was like, oh, yeah, let's do that. So that was my real problem, because I was not enamored with Depp in Black Mass. I just wasn't. And then any other name that gets thrown out there, my reaction is kind of meh. I mean, the same thing with Mr. Holmes. It was kind of a default move, to be honest with you. I had to have five, so that's what I put.
Seuss and I had this exact conversation last year about Eddie Redmayne, and both of us agreed last year the exact same thing, that we thought the female lead stole the show from Eddie Redmayne.
Have either of you seen The Danish Girl?
No, I have not. I'm just saying that's my point.
Okay.
I live in the boonies, Seuss. We don't get real movies out here. I live in the boonies.
You guys barely got Star Wars out there, right?
Yeah, we get Star Wars out here.
No, but
all right,
like,
so move on to Best Actress. Go ahead, Paul.
Feel like with the Eddie Redmayne point, it's like we said the exact same thing last year, and then he wins the award. Are we even sure he's a good actor?
Well,
if
you've seen this, I think you would bang the drum even louder for that argument.
Okay. All right. Without having seen The Danish Girl, I can't really speak on it, but, I mean, these are two very different roles, and he's getting a lot of acclaim for both of them. So, I mean, there's something to be said for that.
Sure.
Moving on to Best Actress.
There's warning bells there. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. We'll see. And then for Best Actress, Brie Larson, I think, is the favorite here. I've got her as the win. Cate Blanchett, Saoirse Ronan, Charlotte Rampling, and Carey Mulligan. The one that's interesting to me is Rampling. This is another one, and I'll take your I'll echo your sort of sentiment on Redmayne. I don't get a lot of excitement for a lot of these actresses, or at least I'm not picking up a lot of traction. It just seems like Rampling's one appearing most in both the sort of Vegas odds and in the other award ceremony. She's the one getting the most sort of traction, so I'm going with her for her movie. But I don't know, Paul, anything you have to add about this one?
I have seen not enough of these movies, unfortunately. My gut instinct is Brie Larson for the win, Cate Blanchett a close second, Saoirse Ronan, and then I diverted from the path. I went Helen Mirren and Maggie Smith. But only because Joy wasn't good, and Charlotte Rampling, I don't know. I feel like at a certain point, I'm going to have the same reaction that a lot of people voting for Best Actress are going to have, and they're going to check off the name they know, which is either Helen Mirren or Maggie Smith. The gut instinct on that.
Okay. And Seuss, what do you got?
Well, I mean, I got once again, I had another problem with filling out the back end of this. I think if what Paul is suggesting happens, I think it's an absolute travesty, because I think this should be Brie Larson in a blowout. I mean, I don't even think this should be close. So, I mean, I don't know if you were suggesting that when they got the actual ballot that that's what they were going to do, but in terms of nominations,
what I'm saying. I'm saying on the ballot. That's what I'm actually saying. You read what I was saying correctly.
Right. Yeah.
I'm saying Brie Larson by a nose.
to see, and I think it should be a blowout. So, I mean, that's where I'm at on this. I'm okay with the Cate Blanchett nomination. I think I'm okay with the Charlotte Rampling nomination. I'm very good with a Ronan nomination. Not a win, but it was a very strong performance, I thought. And then the fifth nomination, I just kind of threw it to the modern-day Meryl Streep nomination that seems to get nominated, whether deserving or not, and just gave it to Jennifer Lawrence because I couldn't really come up with – I thought she was good. I thought the movie was crap. So
Lawrence
that's where
and
I
Logan
was
out.
All
right.
Yeah.
That seems to be the consensus on that movie.
You know, the only thing I'll say two things. One is on Cate Blanchett, source material, timely material, and she was very good in a tough role. The other thing I'll say with Ronan is, man, she's going to be a thing. We've got a couple really good movies with her. She is turning into one hell of a young actress. I mean, I'm really excited for the things she has, whatever she has coming down the pipeline in the future. I really like her a whole hell of a lot.
Well, I was surprised. I didn't know what I was getting when I walked into Brooklyn, to be totally honest with you. And I was really surprised. I thought it was going to be something a little bit different than what I was expecting. Had issues with other small things within the movie, and I really liked it. But her, I didn't think there was a single misstep.
Nope. Phenomenal. I mean, she was great. And she's been, and to be fair, she's been great for a while now. And she's young.
Yeah.
She is so young.
Okay, so moving on to Best Supporting Actor. This is another one. It's getting kind of hard to pin down the back half of the nominations. But I've got Mark Rylance as the favorite for the win. Sly for Creed is somebody who's really high on most boards. I'm going to put him at number two. Stringer Bell, Idris Elba for Beast of No Nation. I have him getting a nomination. Paul Dano for Love and Mercy. So Love and Mercy is getting a little bit of love there. And then Michael Keaton for Spotlight. Somebody from Spotlight's getting a nomination. It could be Mark Ruffalo, but because I hate Mark Ruffalo, I've got to give it to Michael Keaton.
Here's the problem with that. Keaton is actually in the Best Actor category, not supporting. That's the biggest problem that I have.
Is that where he's being shipped?
That is where he's being shipped, yes.
Okay, then I'd have to put Ruffalo on there if that's correct.
Yeah, that is.
Which I do reluctantly. So what's your list, Paul?
My list is going to make you infuriated, so I hope you're okay with that. I'm going Mark Ruffalo for the win, Spotlight.
All right.
Christian Bale for The Big Short, Idris Elba for Beast of No Nation, Sly Stallone for Creed, and Benicio del Toro for Sicario.
I think that's certainly that Del Toro nomination is something that could very well happen. Christian Bale, maybe. The Big Short, I hope it gets a lot of nominations just for our movie league purposes, but I don't know if it's going to get a ton out for the acting. I don't know. We'll see. Seuss, anything out there that jumped out at you?
My ballot is sort of a combination of what you did. Mark, Paul, did you list Rylander or not?
I did not. No.
Okay, Rylander instead of Del Toro for me, off of your ballot. That's basically what it is. I'm in agreement on all fronts on the rest of it.
Do you have Ruffalo with the win?
Yes, I do as well. As much as that delights me.
And here's the thing: I don't hate.
He is a tremendous performer, and anything that we can do to further accentuate that point, other than in your own mind, I am for.
By the way,
when this happens,
I'm going to call you and I'm going to play Sweet Caroline at like full volume, just for the full roundabout.
It's another thing that I hate, but I actually don't hate Mark Ruffalo anymore. I'm just so used to hating him that I can't let go of. I don't want to stop hating him. I've hated him for so long, Mister.
Clip of a Clear Seal director mocking his performance early in his career. Last night,
This was 24 hours ago. Good Lord.
I enjoyed him very much in Foxcatcher.
He's a director of a Clearasil commercial.
You understand my six-year-old son could direct a Clearasil commercial. I mean, that...
Wait a minute, can I go back?
It was just reaction. Anytime I sniff out any Mark Ruffalo hate, I have to embrace it. It's just the way that it works. But he won me over in Foxcatcher. I'm actually on Team Ruffalo now. But for years, he made terrible rom-com after terrible rom-com, often with movies starring grating actresses who I hate. So I watched all of them because I was dating my now wife at the time, and so I've hated him for that for the longest time. I still hate him for that, but he won me over with Foxcatcher, and so now I'm on Team
Ruffalo. I'm telling you right now, surrounded by You Can Count on Me, which is one of the most underrated performances of the early 2000s. I mean, I just don't get it. I really don't, man.
Oh, can I go back second, the actual nomination list for a second? I made a mistake there. Take Christian Bale off my supporting actor list and replace it with Jacob Tremblay from Room.
Nice. All right. Yeah. Okay. I think that's sneaky possibility, honestly.
I huge fans. Have either of you seen that movie?
Yeah.
No.
I saw it.
Yeah. That's a good response, Paul.
That's a deeply troubling movie.
Yeah,
it's the only way I can put it. And here's what I'll say. And Seuss, I know you agree with me on this. My love for Brie Larson is pretty much the exact counter to Rob's hate of Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Right.
And I know Seuss agrees with me on that. Setting that aside, if she doesn't win this award, it's a goddamn travesty.
Right.
She was unbelievable.
Here's an interesting thing. We all have Sly on our ballots for a nominee. Award Circuit dropped them down to 10th, which is far lower than anywhere I've ever seen in terms of the betting odds or other websites that do this. And he's gotten so many nominations other places. I don't know why Award Circuit dropped him to 10th. It almost makes me question my faith in them. It's unique to have to go to Award Circuit now for my go-to place for this Oscar buzz. Rope of Silicon was so good. And so now I don't know. I don't have any faith in my new Oscar place anymore. It's just I feel lost. Seuss, where do you go?
I look a little bit at Gold Derby.
Okay.
And kind of sort through there. They have like 24 or 25 different air rankings in all of the major categories. And I kind of go to my go-to people in that individual list. And they do odds in there as well. I kind of peek at them. That's kind of where I go. But you're right. I don't feel anywhere near as comfortable as I did when I would look at a Ropes of Silicon list and say, I think they pretty much got it. Now it's kind of like throwing darts at the board, to be honest with you.
Yep.
I always...
Okay,
moving
on.
I know
go ahead. Go ahead, Paul.
I would say I always blend Gold Derby with actually IndieWire. I really like what the work IndieWire does, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I feel like I have to do a lot more work on this to get to even half the confidence I had with Rope of Silicon. So if you're listening to us, Rope of Silicon guy, come back. We miss you. But we'll move on to Best Supporting Actress, and then if we have time, we'll do a little bit of box office discussion. Best Supporting Actress, I have Kate Winslet getting the win, although I don't feel confident in that at all. Jennifer Jason Leigh, Rooney Mara, Alicia Vikander, and my last nominee is Kristen Stewart, and I don't have confidence in that, but every critic that I've seen that has seen this movie, every website that has talked about this movie, they all think it's the best performance of any supporting actress all year, but it just might be a situation where nobody has seen this movie, and she'll get blocked out of the nominations. Paul, what do you think?
I have Rachel McAdams with the win, Rooney Mara, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Alicia Vikander, and if you're keeping track of whose names I'm saying, Helen Mirren for Trumbo.
Yeah. All right.
I do have her as a double nominee, yes.
Which is interesting. Seuss, what do you got?
I'm uncomfortable saying this. Other than who wins, I agree with Paul.
Okay.
it's a bad area for me to go in. I'm going with Rooney Mara for the win, not necessarily because I believe that it will happen. I just don't know.
By the way, Rooney Mara, my number two. I actually thought there's a – if you want to make a case for Kate Winslet – or I'm sorry, Kate Blanchett not winning Best Actress, it's that Rooney Mara went toe-to-toe with her. It's a great performance in Carol. So that is very conceivable. I just feel like Spotlight is being viewed as one of the best movies of the year. It's not going to win any of the Best Actor or Actress. I feel like they're going to reward it as many places as they can.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, so that's our Oscar discussion for the day. I don't know if anybody has any sort of parting comments on the Oscars or anything like that. If you do, feel free to cut me off here. But with that concluding, we can spend the last 15 minutes or so discussing box office speculation. We might not need that much time, but
I have one thing to say, and it's the only thing I have to say, because I feel like there's confusion about a lot of the nominees every year. I feel like this is the most muddled Best Picture race in a long time. I told you
before that
I thought we could get between 7 and 10 nominees. I think it could go anywhere from 5 to 10 at this point. I really don't know how many picks are going to get nominated. It's the first time in this modern era Best Picture thing that I've felt that way. I don't know if you guys agree on that, but I really feel like there's literally probably only 2 or 3 surefire nominees.
I would agree. Is Seuss running a marathon right now, or what's happening here? I'm getting a lot of
I thought he
background
was mixing
noise.
And hip-hopping there, yeah.
Okay, but sorry.
Did he ask
if I'm
running a marathon?
Yes, I did.
Do you know me at all?
It just sounded like it. All right, so yeah, and I would agree with that. It does feel like there's, we have, at least I have my 3 or 4 that I'm pretty confident of with terms of nominations for Best Picture, and then after that, are they going to award Star Wars for it not being a terrible movie and making, $800 million? Are they going to reward Mad Max for, basically redefining the action movie genre? Are they going to reward Martian for being, as thought-provoking and as provocative as it is? Are they going to not do any of that stuff and just nominate Joy Carol and a bunch of other, like The Danish Girl and some weird artsy movies that they tend to do. We'll see. But the first episode we did, which was last Saturday, we discussed what we thought Star Wars was going to end up at. And I made a comment that it had only been dropping about 25-30% from its weekly, from its performance the previous week for every day. And I said, even if that jumps up to 50%, Star Wars is going to get to $1 billion. Well, then it decided that it was going to drop 80%. Now, obviously, this has something to do with kids getting back into school. They're no longer free to go to the movies 3 or 4 times a day and just spend all day going to movies and watching Star Wars again and again and again. But I did not see an 80% drop from its weekday performances from the last week of the new year to the first week of the new year, or the last week of the old year to the first week of the new year. I didn't see 80% coming. It has now, it's going to sputter its way to high 7s, low 8s this weekend. I no longer think $1 billion is now in play. I think it's going to fart out at around 900, in the low 900s. So that's something that's happened. Did you guys notice that?
First off, what did I tell you? 950. Come on now.
Yeah,
But second off, The Revenant beat it on Friday. The Revenant's going to pull in $45 million this weekend. It's nuts.
We're close to it.
I know there's been a big media push on The Revenant, but that is not the type of movie that's a big box office movie. The Revenant baffles me.
This is why it doesn't surprise me that much. It is definitely a guy movie. It's a movie that guys are going to go see. You can say, well, no women are going to go watch it. Of course they're going to go watch it. Leo DiCaprio's in it. So they might not know what they're getting themselves into when they go with their husbands or their boyfriends to go see the Revenant. But this, I mean, just he brings the cross appeal to the women, whereas, you know, a rom-com's not going to make $45 million a weekend, even though it's, you know, I don't think it has that sort of cross appeal. I think this is the guy's.
I don't know, dude. If Mark Ruffalo, if Mark Ruffalo gets back in the swing of things, maybe.
No, if he starts doing rom-coms again, I'm back off the Mark Ruffalo wagon.
You know what? I'm gonna write
jumping
the next...
back on and off. I don't write you're on anyway.
I'm gonna write the next big rom-com right now. It's gonna be Sandra Bullock and Mark Ruffalo, and they have trouble getting together. There might be an adopted child. I don't know. I'm working on this script right now in my head. $200 million coming my way.
You go back and watch Heaven Beneath Me or whatever that movie, or Heaven Becomes Me or whatever that movie is with Renee Zellweger, and it's just ugh. It wasn't Renee Zellweger. It was Reese Witherspoon or somebody. I don't know. It's terrible. It was wasted of my 2 hours. Made me want to stab myself in the leg with a fork.
Like you were going to do anything with it.
Really? What were you going to do?
I'm going to go watch a high school basketball game. Yeah.
I did that last night.
Yeah.
We did. Well, so did we, to be fair.
Good times. Enjoyed that. All right. What about any sort of thoughts on what Ride Along 2 might do this weekend? It's starting to track back up north of $100 million on HSX. Do we think it's got that in it? No.
Yes.
No.
No.
Maybe.
Yeah. I would not be stunned to see a $50 million opening weekend, but then it falls off the face of the earth.
Here's
I
one
think
that
it
I
does well, and it makes me sad.
Oh, it's a guilty pleasure movie. Yeah, you can kind of watch it and just, you know, kind of laugh and then never think about it ever again. Sort of like the old Rush Hour movies. I think that's a decent comp for it, is the Rush Hour sort of comp.
Hey, Chris Tucker,
here's
National
one
Treasure.
That's interesting to me that I don't think is going to hit its HSX number, but I could be wrong because you never know what was going to happen with these types of movies. But 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi is up to almost $70 on HSX.
Stop.
I don't see it being a movie that many people go see, but then again, maybe it is.
Can I tell you what's funny about the pub for this movie? And I genuinely believe this. Literally every time I turn on my TV, John Krasinski is pimping this movie. And I have literally not seen one preview for it. Which I find the dichotomy of the two is very odd.
Yeah, but, I mean, is he a guy, I mean, we like them in The Office. He's great, he's funny, he's charming. But is he a guy that anybody's going to go really listen to? Like, am I getting my movie, recommendations from?
All I know is he is turned up on every late night show, and not only that, he's turned up on two podcasts I listen to, pimping this movie. Two of them. And they're sports podcasts. They have nothing to do with movies. So I feel like the movie is in the public conscience. And like I said, I literally, the only reason I've seen a preview to it is because I had to go seek it out online. I've not seen it on TV. I don't know where the TV blitz is. So I don't feel like this is going to trend like American Sniper, where you couldn't put your TV on and not see a preview of Bradley Cooper shooting somebody. Because literally that was on every commercial break. You saw a preview to American Sniper last year. So it's not like that. So I don't really get, like, I don't know, maybe there's a lot of Office fans out there. I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, we'll see. I just don't see it making $70 million. But, you know, these movies that tend to surprise me are the ones that I think are overvalued, that I just don't see a lot of buzz for, and then they end up blowing up. So I could be wrong on that, but I just see that movie kind of bombing out a little bit. The one movie that I think is underpriced on HSX right now, and I don't know why, and maybe you guys can provide insight on this, It's the latest Coen Brothers picture, starring George Clooney and Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill and Josh Brolin and Scarlett Johansson. Hail Caesar, which looks very interesting. About a fixer for the studios who covered up Hollywood scandals during the 1950s. It inspired by the real-life Eddie Mannix, who may have been involved in the suicide of George Reeves. And it's only pricing at like $38 right now.
But I can answer that completely. I have your absolute answer. Coen Brothers movies don't make box office. For our purposes in the Movie League, I think how that got bought in our auction, that could pay off, because I think that is that was the spring pod movie that could steal a nomination come next year. However, the largest grossing Coen Brothers movie, and I could be wrong on this, but I'm relatively certain it was No Country for Old Men, and I believe it was in the 40s. The largest Coen Brothers grossing movie is ridiculously low.
Let's check this out. I'm on boxofficemojo.com right now. This is actually you're going to be surprised by this. Once I say the name of it, you're going to be. True Grit made 171.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. I forgot.
After that it's No Country for Old Men, which is a little bit higher than you had, which is 74. Burn After Reading made 60. Goofy movie made $60 million. But incorrect, because A Serious Man, Inside Llewellyn Davis, both of those did nothing at the box office. They made less than 15 each.
But think about the Coen Brothers movies that people think of. It's No Country for Old Men. It's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's Fargo.
Right.
It's Raising Arizona. Those movies didn't do shit at the box office. Nothing. Nada. So, I mean, is it reasonable to expect it's going to make more than $40 million? Yeah, with that cast, but it's not a given. It really isn't.
Well, I think it's better than I think you credit for, but go ahead, Seuss.
This is all I'm basing my opinion of this movie on entirely, is the preview that I saw for it in the theater. I'm not sure what they were going for in an attempt to draw an audience to this movie. I believe what they were going for was a broad comedy. And if that's what they were going for, they failed miserably, because it wasn't funny at all. And I was in a fairly full theater, and no one was laughing. So it was...
But if you would have saw the trailer for Burn After Reading, you would have had that same reaction, right?
I don't know. I mean, it's drawing card is who's in it, and if you're one of these people that actually likes their movie to have some sort of substance and doesn't look... It just looked bad. It looked bad.
It's just I want to make a comparison. They tried to write George Clooney's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou character into...
I'll buy
Hail
that
Caesar.
Based on what I saw.
Yeah, and it doesn't
I'll buy
fly.
That. And it doesn't fly. It just looked in that snippet when they're attempting to convince me that this is a movie that I want to see, that this is a movie that has problems. I'm not going to enjoy this movie.
It might depend on how saturated it gets. If we look at the Coen Brothers' last movies, Llewellyn Davis never got sent to more than 730 theaters. That was as much as it got,
right.
and it sputtered out at $13 million. However, of their last movies that have got sent to at least 1,500 screens, they all reached at least $35 million at the box office, the lowest one being Intolerable Cruelty at $35
million.
Even if you go back to, like, it only made it to 850 theaters and it got to $45 million. Big Lebowski went to 1,200 theaters and got to 17. Fargo went to 700 theaters and got to 24 million. And those two are back in the mid 90s, where if you adjust for inflation,
their numbers
are probably both closer to 35, 40. But
I really feel like the movie that the comparison is, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It goes towards more of that farce thing. I don't think they hit any of the notes.
I'm agreeing with you too much, Paul, today, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it should. It should.
If it goes to 2,000 theaters, though, I can see it easily getting to 40, easily exceeding the 38 price tag that it's got on HSX right now. So I think that might be a movie. If you play that game of speculation, maybe take a flyer on it. Maybe not invest too heavily in it. But.
I disagree only because it's got competition in the theaters. It actually does. Like, I could see it completely flopping along the lines, and I mean,
well,
I'm going overboard here, but along the lines of Gem.
It doesn't have
like,
competition.
No one could go.
The movies that come out 2 weeks before it comes out are Dirty Grandpa, The Fifth Wave, and The Boy. The movie that comes out the weekend before is Kung Fu Panda, 50 Shades of Black.
Okay.
And then the movies that come out the same weekend are Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and The Choice. Now,
the
next weekend, it's second weekend, it has Deadpool and Zoolander 2. So it will have competition its second weekend, but there's going to be nothing that people are going to go see second, third weekend in competition with Hail Caesar's opening weekend. And its opening weekend, it's going to have free reign. So
if you're going to say, if you're saying it's going to make 40, it better make 30 that first weekend.
Oh, no. First, to make
That's
40 in its
saying.
Entire run, it needs to make like 20 million its opening weekend. And
no,
I
no,
mean,
no.
I would say it would need to make 15 with
Buzz, it's going to fall off the face of the earth that second weekend with the new releases coming out.
Yeah, but
what's
even 80% drop?
Fifth.
It is February 5th.
Okay. Well, see, for me, I'm always looking towards like those movies in early February. That is a week that, to me, when I look at it, if you're a movie person like that is involved in that kind of stuff, is that you're still hitting those Oscar movies from last year that you missed during that time.
Yep.
It's right after the nominations come out. It's if you're not one of those people that just religiously goes to the theater, then there will be a lot of competition for that movie because you'll still have people going to spillover Academy movies that missed them before they got nominated because you're only, when that happens, you're 2 to 3 weeks removed from the actual nominations.
The stragglers among them
are trying to pick up those movies.
Yeah. And I could see that. The bigger warning, I guess, is for me is the fact that it's being released February 5th, which is box office wasteland. And I mean, movies can make money in that time, but studios tend to dump their garbage in the January February pocket unless it's animated, and they have a weird sort of system on what movies they send out. But movies like this, they tend to dump their garbage in January, February, so I'm wondering why this movie's being dumped in February.
To that note, can we actually just for like 2 minutes talk about the next weekend for that precise reason with Deadpool, Zoolander 2, and the Valentine's Day movie? I mean, that's going to be a big weekend for movies. Am I crazy?
But Valentine's Day always is. I mean,
that's sort of
a 3 day weekend.
But Valentine's Day,
the 3 day weekends are the exception to the rule there.
Valentine's Day is because typically of the romantic comedy that comes out that weekend. Yeah, there can be counter programming, but at least by what you're looking at, there's two really big counter programming movies in Deadpool and Zoolander 2 coming out that weekend, along with your standard rom com movie.
If I'm not mistaken, that weekend is a President's Day weekend. There's no school that Monday. It's a 3 day weekend. Weekends are the exception to the rule.
Okay.
That's a big weekend. We have about 30 seconds left. So I'll just tell people to go to facebook.com/group/movieboobs. You can join us there and we'll get reminders of upcoming episodes. You can also leave questions or you can email us at movieboobs@mail.com, movieboobs@mail.com. No Gmail. just mail.com. Again, thanks for listening. For my co-host Paul Schmidt and special guest / third boob Steve Susie, I'm Rob Laird, and we are the Movie Boobs.
Boobs.
Boobs.